I call the Civil Law and Data Practices Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. The roll has been taken. Representative Vogel, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I would move to approve that, Mr. Chair.
All right. Motion's been made to approve the minutes from March 14th. Any discussion? Comments? No discussion or comments. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. On to House File 2245. Representative Scott?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2245 was brought to me by primarily Dakota County, but affects all counties. And this similar language has moved in the Senate. Our former Representative Holberg and now County Commissioner got wind of this language in the Senate, and it wasn't quite up to her standards as far as data practices go. And so that's why the bill is before us. And the plan would be, members, to put this in the data practices omnibus bill. And with that, I will turn it over to Dakota County to explain. Oh, one more thing, Mr. Chair. We're deleting a few sections that are either duplicative or, like, the first section.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
If I could interrupt you for a moment, please, before we move on to the amendments. Representative Scott moves House File 2245 before the committee and recommended it be re-referred to Health and Human Services Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On to your amendment.
Thank you. So the first change would be in Section 1, Subdivision 12, I guess it's the only subdivision, would be to delete that. That is duplicative language and would also cause this bill to have to go to education, and so we're deleting that. The other sections are 6, 7, and 8. And Representative Lesh, I just spoke to you and I didn't mention those sections, but those have to do with the appropriations and so forth, and there's, appropriations, revisor instructions, and repealer is being deleted. So I will have the testifiers further explain that and what this bill does.
Representative Lesh and Representative Scott, do they have the Mary Louise Holberg seal of approval?
She's smiling. They do.
That's good enough for me, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Representative Scott, before that, would you like to move this amendment?
I need to move the oral amendments.
Okay. Is there any additional discussion? Is the amendment, oral amendment, clear? All right, seeing no additional discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion carries. Good morning, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mary Liz Holberg. I'm a Dakota County Commissioner, and I have with me today Kelly Harder, Director of Community Services for Dakota County. First, we'd like to thank Chair Scott for carrying this bill and to Representative Lesh's question, we're almost there. The language is before you today did not take what I would call the best route for data practices provisions in the Senate. I'm kind of a stickler for process, and a bunch of this language ended up as an amendment in Jim Abler's committee and not introduced as a separate bill, and I became aware of what was going on pretty late in the process. So we've cleaned this up to the degree that we can, given the time frame. I think we're close. I'm guessing we're 90 to 95% of the way there and would continue to work on it prior to the Omnibus Data Practices Bill being moved on the House floor. And so we should have it completely polished and ready by then. But basically what we're finding out is that in order to have success, both this issue, this bill addresses kind of two issues, schools and helping kids be successful by age 8, and then also the ability of community corrections and our jails to work together to provide supports for those getting out of the jails. And what we're finding is that you can have the best plan around housing and food, et cetera, but if you don't have the component of a preschool screening and some of the education components, or vice versa, you're missing a large part of some of the needs that kids have. And quite frankly, our departments are working with families with young kids that the school district doesn't even know are in the community. And the other is true, there's kids that the school districts have identified that have needs that they're not able to share that information with community services. So, you know, a large overview, that's kind of what the bill does. I'll let Mr. Harder add a little additional information as the person that works with this day in and day out, and we'd be happy to stand for questions.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kelly Harder. I'm the Director of Community Services for Dakota County. I want to also thank Chairperson Scott for her support on this, as well as my esteemed Commissioner Holberg in her support and guidance through this process. I thought, you know, now that you've eaten your representative Wheaties for the morning, you'd start the day with a really colorful visual. And really, in that summary, I use this because, you know, data can be complicated, and if we start with just the data, you know, data is data. The question is, what is it that we're trying to accomplish and why before we get to the how we do it? And the language is about how we do that. And what you have in front of you is a visual of our integrated service delivery model in Dakota County. Rarely does a family or an individual come into our system. Our system in our county represents all of corrections, adult and children, all of public health, all the social services, that's womb to the tomb services, literally third trimester, up to paying for indigent burials, all the eligibility, child support, workforce council, as well as veteran services and 4-H. That all sits under the umbrella of our community services. Most individual and or families touch multiple programs, and under current data practice, it doesn't necessarily allow an efficient way. For us on the front end, it's the circle here, right? What we're wanting to do is to do a better job serving citizens of our state and county by looking at population and program level data only. What it is not is a crossover. It preserves choice, and it preserves the need for a person to have consent before we go down into what I call the vertical depth of personal health information. It does not compromise that. What it does is Commissioner Holberg shared with us was allow us to work, and I'll give you one explicit example. In South St. Paul, they have 600 students who come to kindergarten. They do not know of 200 of them if they're reading ready at all. They know 400. We're working with the superintendent and others. Merely by creating a consent, which we were able to do on all of our families who are involved in WIC, in our family home visiting program, in less than 45 days, we identified 100 of those 200 unidentified students because we were working with them. But the school didn't know because we have not been able to share just identifiable information to ping the data and say, oh, we didn't know you were working. If we do know, we will now individually reach to a family and ask if they're willing to sign their consent. So we identified 100. Pre-screening assessments have already started, and we're working to find those other 100 students so that they know their reading readiness level when they hit kindergarten and or what can we do ahead of time. That's one small example of what we're trying to accomplish in this bill. This really we do look at as a modernization of the bill. There's terminology, welfare services, just for everyone, is an antiquated term that's no longer used at a federal level, and nor should a state, so we're wanting to modernize that, bring in other departments and the capacity to serve. You see Native American and tribal language, that's because they now provide social service and community services different from when the Act was created. And there's also a capacity in here that as child protection, and we would be able to respond back to a mandated reporter, say it's a special ed teacher or other, and just give them a status update of if an investigation is involved, we're working or not. Not in more detail, it allows us to keep working with, while they're working with a child, we might have facts, and under current law, we cannot tell a mandated reporter the status of the case. So this really is about modernizing it, and yet preserving the integrity of consent and that individual data. And thank you for your time this morning. I'd stand for any questions.
Is there any questions, comments for the testifiers? Seeing none, any discussion or comments about the bill? Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair. I'd be curious a little more, Commissioner Holberg, about what your concerns are relative to that remaining 10% that's unresolved.
Commissioner Holberg.
Well, I'll share with you because you'll understand, having served with me. When I first saw the language being considered, it actually opened up the Health Records Act and would have allowed community service workers access to medical data on individuals and their families. So, as you can imagine, I had quite a reaction to that. So, as you know, when you work with data bills, getting them out there in the public and letting people look at them and kind of think about it, given this is a fairly recent introduction, I've given it my best, you know, shot, you know, to get it to where it was a lot better. But I think that the time and having other eyes look at it would get us maybe to that 10%. Maybe there are no need for improvement, but to just have it slapped on a bill in the Senate in a committee and not have any type of formal process, let alone a way to get to the Civil Law Committee in the House, necessitated, you know, quickly getting language on a bill and getting it introduced. So I hope we're there, but I think that we're open to listen if there are any additional concerns. It's my understanding the Department of Human Services has issues with changing welfare data, the definition, and then the cost of changing that term throughout all their rules and laws throughout. I mean, the revisor's office could do a lot of it, but to the degree that it's reflected in rules and policies in the department, I think is a concern. And I don't know if somebody's here to testify on that.
Well, Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Commissioner Holbert. And, you know, members, we have every year folks coming forward, usually folks who work in, you know, agencies who have good ideas about how they could make things better or the job a little bit easier. I think last year it was Hennepin County Human Services or Housing who wanted access to health data. I don't know if you remember that, but it was, you know, it certainly would have probably made things a lot easier for the job, right? They didn't have to check with three people and then track down the homeless person about health data. They have it because there's that data sharing. I completely get that. But then there are those of us, both on the right and the left. I take me on the left, for example. Information coming in regarding, let's say, citizenship status. So if what the federal government's talking about now, doing mass raids on, you know, like public housing or finding where people are at the school, there are concerns about that on the right. You know, you got doctors asking questions, is there a gun in the house? Okay, so if you're concerned about when they're going to do gun restrictions, they have a list of everyone who has guns. the right's concerned about that. And so I appreciate you keeping close eyes on this, Commissioner Holbert, because when you dig down on that stuff, I think that there could very well be unintended consequences of stuff that we don't even know about right now, what the next issue is going to be. And I know and appreciate when folks who work in the field say, hang on a second, you guys don't understand, this just makes our job easier. And I get that. I want to make your job easier. I just don't want to get, you know, my hand in the fan 3-4 years from now on a different issue.
Commissioner Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one of the principles that I try to adhere to is a balance. In other words, if you're opening up so a lot more people would have access, then you really got to define and limit what they have access to. Or if there's broad access to information, then you really limit the people that would have access to a lot of information. So as you can see, what we've done in this language is being very limiting as to the amount of information that can be shared, basically in a pointer system or an ability to identify individuals and then go get the consent from those individuals if additional information is needed.
Representative Lesh.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for watching closely.
And if I might just add, in the area of the
Commissioner Holbert,
the correction data, it doesn't really make sense when we release individuals out of our jails and basically put them out on the street and say, be successful. You know, they might need a place to live. They might need a little help with getting a job. And the fact that our counties have those in-house services already, you know, and sending them out on the street rather than maybe having a little bit of a coordinated plan to say, when you get out, our community services division can help you with these things. In addition, here are the accountability measures that you're going to be expected to meet in order to retain these services. This is what's expected. And then have an ability of those two silos, if you will, to communicate, I think, will provide better opportunities for success once these individuals move from the corrections component into getting back into the community.
Anyone from the audience wish to testify? Seeing none, any additional comments or discussion on this bill? Representative Scott, concluding thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just wanted to see if we could change that motion. We removed the appropriation piece at the end, so I don't think it would need to go to HHS Finance any longer. And so if we could change that motion. And then I just wanted to say that I did have DHS in my office yesterday, and they do have problems with changing the welfare language to community services, and I'll be working with them as we go along. Commissioner Holberg articulated what their concerns were, and so going forward, that is one thing that we'll be addressing.
So with the motion being changed, Representative Scott moves House File 2245 as amended to be recommended and re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can I keep this?
Yes.
House File 1840. Representative Scott. House File 1840?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the revisers bill, the annual revisers bill. And so I will really just pretty much, it's a technical bill as it always is, and I will turn it over to our representative from the revisers office.
Great. Thank you. Representative Scott moves House File 1654. No, I'm sorry, House File number 1854. 40 before the committee and recommend it be re-referred to the General Register. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Case. I'm the Deputy Revisor for Drafting in the Revisor's Office. As Representative Scott said, this is our annual Revisor's Bill. It makes a variety of technical, non-substantive corrections to statutes and laws, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or discussion about the revisor's bill? Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott, are there any hidden gems in here that are going to pop out?
Representative Scott?
Mr. Speaker, Representative Lesch, I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone from the audience wishing to testify? Any additional discussion about this bill? Seeing none, Representative Scott, concluding thoughts?
Appreciate your support.
Representative Scott renews her motion for House File 1840 be recommended and re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion carries.
Thank you very Representative Torkelson is in another committee, so he is being retrieved. Okay. Members, staff has just informed me that on 2376 that there's quite a big packet. It's clipped together, and the handouts are in a second, what do you call these? Slicky green folder, green sleeve. So lots of data there. Did you see this? So just an informal poll of the members. How many of you do bracketology during this time of year?
Oh.
Anybody? Representative Smith? No?
I don't gamble.
Okay. All right. Wow. I didn't fill out any brackets this year. Okay, they're taking a vote in environment, so Representative Torkelson is needed. I don't see Representative Becker Flynn in the room yet. So, oh, she's also in environment. So we've got that little thing going for us. So we'll just.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, yes, Representative.
You know, not to play with you or anything, but once upon a time, if there were non-controversial issues, and I'm not sure if Representative Becker Flynn is or not, but certain chairs would pass bills in absentia in order to cut down on time.
That is true, Representative Lesh. I hate to rob a freshman of their first opportunity before our committee.
Madam Chair?
Representative Smith.
Representative Lesh, specifically I heard there's going to be very good glazed and chocolate donuts coming as well.
I withdraw
might
my
be worth, might be worth the wait. So we'll just kind of recess and talk amongst yourselves. And then they'll both come down here at the same time, then we'll have to decide who goes.
What's that?
Jeff was so ready to talk about
that. Back my,
yeah. So sad. He was like in the room.
Going down east?
He was like, anybody? No one?
I'm one of the 11 floats.
Personally?
Yeah, just me personally. They fight. So they have a... have you ever been to Easton?
So cool. Yeah.
What's that?
The size of this room. It's 199 people.
Is it on
Highway 24? No, it's on 109 between Blue Earth and Wells. And so we're going to go south to 22. So what happens is that the in front of Dad's bank, not my brother's bank, they have a card table. The county commissioner sits there and announces on the Blue Earth radio station each of the 11 floats that they go down. It's about as Americana as you can get.
Yeah. What was nice is I got home and I actually ate dinner before 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock.
Every kid he sees, well, he's up in here and gives him a silver.
I will call the Civil and Data Practices Committee back to order. I will move House File 2376 and recommend it be re-referred to Ways and Means. Representative Torkelson, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry.
It's all right.
Busy morning today. Anyway, happy to be here before your committee. The heart of this bill is to reauthorize, or to authorize, actually, federal dollars that are to be spent on transportation. These are FAST Act dollars that are received from the federal government and normally authorized by the legislature in order for them to be utilized by the Department of Transportation. These first became available back last fall, and at the time there was a difference of opinion between the governor's office and the past chair of the Transportation Committee. The governor's office thought that these funds could be authorized by the LAC, and that have not been the tradition here at the legislature. The chair of the Transportation Committee at the time sent a letter to the governor and asked him not to use the LAC process, but to wait for the legislature to authorize these funds. After that exchange, Chair Sanders sent a letter to the Department of Transportation requesting data in regard to the discussions around this exchange between the governor and Chair Kelly. There were some emails that have been exchanged, and under the Data Practices Act, asked to see those emails. The Department of Transportation did not respond to that request in any way that I'm aware of. So when I became chair of the Transportation Committee this year, I sent a second letter to the Department of Transportation requesting this data, these emails, and did receive a response. But you have some samples before you of the number of, there's many more than you have in your sample, but these emails were heavily redacted. We feel that there's information in these emails that we have every right to see. We are very suspicious of the delay of 4 months in their response, and so we decided that it would be in the process of authorizing the expenditure of these funds that we would attach an amendment that we attached in Ways and Means to the clone of this bill that would basically says that when we receive the unredacted emails, then the funds will be authorized. And because that deals mentions issues that deal with your committee, that's why we have a clone bill here this morning, so that we can address this issue in your committee, Madam Chair. And I think I've covered the crux of the situation, and I'm happy to take questions.
Any questions, Representative Lash?
Madam Chair, thank you. Chair Torkelson, so I'm confused about, what do you think you're going to find in the unredacted portions of the emails? What kind of information?
Chair Torkelson?
Well, you know, when the department fails to respond for 4 months, it makes me wonder, why didn't they respond? So apparently there's something that... there's something here. I don't know. If I knew what, I wouldn't have to ask for the information. But their delay in response alone, to me, sends a message that there's something unusual going on.
Well,
Madam Chair, when we do this in the courts, we usually have to make some kind of offer of proof to suggest of what we think we're going to find. And judges universally frown on what they refer to as fishing expeditions. So, well, I don't know what I'm going to find, but I know it when I'll see it. Is there someone from MnDOT? Is there someone from the department here who's going to testify in opposition, Madam Chair? You know,
is there anyone here from MnDOT?
Please
come forward.
I might add, Madam Chair.
Yes,
I didn't make the original request. The person who made that original request is a past chair and past member of this body. I am, to some degree, depending on their judgment and their desire to see this information. It was their judgment that made the determination in the first place whether or not this information should be requested. My effort is to follow up on their request. This did not originate with me.
Well, and Madam Chair, and Chair Torkelson, I can appreciate that. As most members, past members of this committee, know, I am no stranger to trying to demand information from government agencies or local governments that has not been forthcoming to this committee. So, yes, when I request information, I want that information. I'm just saying that normally what I would like to see is some kind of offer of proof or some, hey, this is what we expect to find as opposed to a fishing expedition. But, Madam Chair, maybe we could hear from the department as to reasons why they think this shouldn't be disclosed.
And we'll move to that.
Madam Chair?
Representative Smith.
Representative Lesh, are you suggesting that this offer of proof is something we should consider for this bill exclusively, or is that as a new standard going forward, or a standard we should have adhered to in the past?
No, Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, no. I mean, let's put it this way. If I'm chair, I don't want to have to make an offer proof. I'd prefer to go forward on a hunch as chair. That's what I would prefer. However, from an objective standpoint, there is some reasonableness factor in making some kind of offer proof. Now, you could say, as chair, you're not acting in the role as a litigant. You're acting in the role as an arbiter. And so, therefore, you should have the exclusive authority to say, no, I want to see it because I want to see it, which a judge can look at in camera or for whatever purposes. But we're talking about disclosing this information publicly, you know, not just for the exclusive review of the chair, and that's why I asked. So I don't know if I'm proposing a new standard. I was just wondering if that sort of hunch or articulable hunch was out there. That's all I was wondering.
Madam Chair, Smith. Representative Lesh, I appreciate your comments and the additional description of your statement. And I ask simply because I would not want this committee to be limited in its scope or ability to function, regardless of who has the gavel in their hand.
Very fine. If we could hear from the department on why you think this information that was requested is so heavily redacted. I understand part of it was prior to the budget process, prior to and during the budget process, before budget is released, that information is not considered public information. But now that the budget has been released and several months ago, this to me is kind of unacceptable. To have talking points totally redacted, I don't see the reason for that. And so I would just ask you to introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Peterson from the Department of Transportation. And my understanding is that the reason that information is redacted is because it's considered supporting data for the draft materials. And so as a result, supporting data is not considered public data. So it was that's why it was redacted.
Representative Torkelson or Chair Torkelson?
Thank you. I would refer members of the committee to the Minnesota statutes that are in your packets along with the emails and under classifications. After the budget is presented to the legislature by the state administration, supporting data, including agency requests, are public data.
Mr. Peterson? That seems to conflict with.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I meant to say that it's in preliminary drafts, supporting data is considered public data, but these are preliminary drafts. I'm sorry, I didn't have my cheat sheet in front of me, but that is the position of the department that they're preliminary drafts.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, what is your role at the department?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I'm in Government Affairs.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, thank you. So, Government Affairs, did you consult with legal counsel before appearing today?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, no, I did not.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, thank you. Why not, sir?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, my intent was simply to come here and observe the proceedings of the committee, not necessarily to testify. This is an area that's outside my area of expertise and was not really adequately prepared, honestly, to come before you this morning because I didn't bring my copy of the letter. I apologize for that.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Mr. Peterson, why again did you not bring a copy of the letter?
Mr. Peterson?
Representative Scott, Representative Smith. I was in a hurry to get here on time, and I simply walked out of my office and left it behind my desk, to tell you the truth.
Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Peterson, how long was this meeting on your schedule this morning, this hearing date? When were you notified of it?
I think I became aware of it. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative Smith, I became aware of it yesterday.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Peterson. Well, as a member of the committee, I would appreciate it if you were going to testify that you would bring all the supporting documentation that you need. That would seem to be a considerate act, considering this is when we're meeting. So would you be able to go get that letter?
Mr. Peterson.
Representative Scott, excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I could go get the letter if that would be helpful. Representative Torkelson allowed me to take a look at his so I could remind myself of the relevant phrase. But if the committee thinks that would be helpful, I could certainly go get my copy. It's the same one that Representative Torkelson has.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Peterson, so you said that these documents are under preliminary drafts. That was the term you used. Is that correct?
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that's correct.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Peterson, is that a term that you created or did legal counsel create that?
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, as far as I know, it was created by our legal staff when they prepared the response to Representative Torkelson.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Peterson, is legal staff here today to speak to that particular issue?
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, no, they're not here this morning.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Peterson. Are they available to be here this morning?
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I don't know.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, Mr. Peterson, why not?
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I can't answer that question. I don't know.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Peterson. I don't understand. Help me understand. So you come to a meeting unprepared without the documents you need, using terms given to you by someone who's not available to describe them, and you don't quite understand what's in the letter. I'm confused. Help me understand.
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I have previously, when this amendment was came up in Ways and Means, I did review the terms of the letter and the statute to try to assure myself that I understood it. And so this morning, as I came here, I as I mentioned, I didn't bring my letter with me, but looking at the copy of the letter that Representative Torkelson has, you know, I reminded myself of the relevant phrase that was used in order to justify the redactions.
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Peterson. So the crux of your argument is that you're saying preliminary drafts, and then you're not able to offer any additional explanation or verification as to why you're not willing to give the information to Chair Torkelson as requested.
Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, no, I wasn't involved in the preparing the response to Representative Torkelson's request. I have not ever actually even seen any of the documents that were submitted or the ones that were redacted or the ones that were not redacted.
Representative Smith?
Madam Chair, Mr. Peterson, with all due respect, then why are you testifying before the committee if you can't help us solve this?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the chair asked if there is anyone from MnDOT here, and I was here, so then I was asked to come down.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Mr. Peterson, well, I appreciate that, sir, but with all due respect, I would like to have someone from the department that can actually speak to the crux of this issue. This committee is meeting now, and we showed up on time, and we remembered our documents, and I find it extremely disrespectful by the department that they would send their government affairs representative, who is wholly inadequate and unprepared to address this issue that has been scheduled for at least 48 hours. And I would suggest to the Madam Chair that we recess until the department can produce someone who can actually speak to this issue.
Madam Chair. Representative Smith, I'll take that under consideration. Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Smith. So I asked him to come up here because I didn't have a real good sense of the department's defense of the redaction. And it seems to me that there's not really defense, and I put you in a bad spot, sir, because you came to probably just observe. But just the fact that they sent someone to observe and not vigorously defend the redaction gives me really everything that I need to know about this, besides you guys have a majority on the committee, so you're going to pass it anyway. So I would probably say, well, hang on a second, let's do a more thorough review of this. If the department saw fit to send folks, including their lawyers, to explain why the lawyers redacted the way they did or the letters were drafted the way they did, and Mr. Peterson's here, not in a position to answer those questions, and I think that tells us everything we need to know, because if the department was serious about saying, well, hang on a second, there's secret stuff in here that you can't know, they would have sent their lawyers in to do it. They didn't. Ms. Peterson got thrown under the bus. So I guess I would submit that I think we have our answer by lack of an answer.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Smith.
Yes, Madam Chair, Mr. Peterson, I fully acknowledge that you were, as Representative Lesch described, put in a difficult position. My comment is not directed at you per se, but more at the department. That type of disrespect for this request and Chair Torkelson's bill is unacceptable. And while I hold you accountable because you're here, it is really the disdain in my voice is really more for the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith. And it is very frustrating, and it's not the first time that it's happened where we have an issue that involves the department, whether it's data practices request or whatever. But it's again, the Department of Transportation is no different than many other departments that fail to send the right people to a committee to answer the questions. And it is very frustrating. We are trying to hold the agencies accountable because we fund them. And when they don't show up to answer these questions, it's very frustrating. So I'm sure Mr. Peterson will take back our sentiments. And members, I just want to point out one good example on page 4 of this spreadsheet, the longer one, page 4 of 6. The TPIC agenda and materials for September 15th. Now, I have no idea why that would need to be redacted. I don't see that as being preliminary draft information. But if you look through these documents, and our staff has done a lot of work on this, and whether, you know, on the face of the pieces that were sent to us, they've done a lot of work on these sections that are redacted and saying this is what it appears to be addressing. And it really does seem like there's a cover-up here. And it's very troubling. Representative Howell, you are next on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Peterson, I'm not going to – I don't think you have this answer, so I'm going to go to nonpartisan staff. And when it says in the classification where Representative Torkelson was reading, when it says supporting data do not include preliminary drafts, that's preliminary drafts indicating what? I have my assumptions, but I would rather have you tell me what that is rather than – me make my assumption.
Sure. Mr. Hopkins?
Madam Chair, Representative Powell, members. Section 13.605, Subdivision 1, Paragraph B, deals with legislative and budget proposals, and the language is legislative and budget proposals, including preliminary drafts, are protected non-public data before the budget is presented to the legislature by the state administration. So the subsequent reference to preliminary drafts, when that subparagraph says supporting data do not include preliminary drafts, presumably means preliminary drafts of legislative and budget proposals.
Representative Howell?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hopkins. So as I look at all of these emails that have been redacted, to me those are not or do not include preliminary drafts of the budget. They are emails that I would have to assume are now public data because the budget has been released. Am I not tracking, or am I an 8-track tape player here?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, members, so after the budget is presented to the legislature by the state administration, the statute says that supporting data, including agency requests, are public data, and supporting data do not include preliminary drafts. So preliminary drafts would remain protected non-public data, but other supporting data, and the statute doesn't specify what all that includes, would become public data after the budget is presented to the legislature.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just find it appalling that they have totally redacted emails throughout here, which to me, I think it proves the point that they're not being upfront and honest with the process, and I'm very disappointed.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just wanted to make a brief comment here. So I've heard in addition to the terms that I've heard in the dialogue in the last few minutes, I've heard disappointing, disrespectful, frustrating, troubling, appalling. Just wanted to add one more. As both a member of this committee, Civil Law, and as a member of Transportation Finance, and as the legislature as a whole, as a representative of the people, just wanted to add one more term. It's very arrogant, the way that MnDOT is acting towards the representatives of the great people of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Representative Lesh?
Madam Chair, I hear the frustrations in your voices, and you may, you know, I'm not a transportation guy, so I don't know the way this works, and you may have right to be, but, you know, you all have the authority, or this committee has the authority, under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 8, I think 8.16 or something, to issue subpoenas to get it before the committee if they won't come before the committee. Now, that hasn't been used in the time that I've served in the legislature. But if I may, Madam Chair, Chair Torkelson, have you heard from folks in your committee that you've needed to hear from on this, or are we still kind of doing a little shadow boxing here and trying to find out what's going on?
Chair Torkelson.
Well, thank you. You know, the delay in any response to the original request to me is the most alarming thing here. When Chair Sanders requested this data back in October of last year, and the department responded in no way until I sent a second letter in January, just to me is what sends up a red flag. And I think we deserve some kind of response. And it seems like their message has been changing as to what classification this data fits into. They just seem to be hiding behind the next available curtain.
Well, Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, thank you, Chair Torkelson. So did the commissioner come in and testify before your committee and give any answers to this, or any of their lawyers or anyone else directly involved in the redaction, to give you reasons for the original redaction or reasons for their changing justifications? Has anyone spoken on the record in public about that, who was qualified in a position to do that?
Chair Torkelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lesh, the only official response I have is in your packet. It's a letter from the department stating their reasons for keeping this data non-public.
Representative Lesh?
Well, Madam Chair, you know, again, far be it from me to listen, it's the administration, it's my party, I defend the administration on this, but it's also our job to conduct legislative oversight. You all have tools at your disposal to do this, and I kind of see the frustration that you feel like you've been unable to get this done. Do what you got to do. Use what you need to get the answers. You could issue a subpoena, deuces tecum, by the authority of Minnesota Statutes Chapter 8, demand that the commissioner appear with the information. Simple matter, statute. It hasn't been used, but the tool is there for you to use it. I think that would be probably the easiest thing to do, but it's my opinion, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. And we may have to call on somebody from the governor's office, too, because I see Ms. Tincture is on copied on an email, and all these pages aren't numbered, but it's in the thicker packet. And at the top it says number 7, page 1 of 2, and an email from Stuart McMullen to numerous people, and it says the subject line, the LAC request. It says, this is our legislative liaison's take on the meeting regarding the LAC meeting. Please don't forward. Thanks. And then if you see the email response, it's redacted. It's very troubling. Ms. Tincture is copied on this, as is Joanna Dornfield. So,
Madam Chair.
Representative Lesh.
I would just point out that I hope, to the extent that the legislature outs all this, that we remain extremely aware that we have by statute exempted ourselves from subjection to that. So there's still a certain measure of hypocrisy in insisting on it. That said, we do have the job of legislative oversight.
Right. And one of the other things that's concerning about this is they've kind of stiffed the legislature on this, but sometimes they stiff citizens that don't have really any authority without going to court and expending a lot of money to try to find these answers. And then we're finding out in some cases that are going on right now that it's drug out for years, and by that time, sometimes that data is gone. So next on my list is Representative Howe, then Representative Smith. Representative Howe.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Torkelson, I can sense that trying to put together a budget now on the transportation side without this information is going to be, to me, a little bit challenging, and I don't know how we get to a resolution in time to put that all together. I guess how does this impact our ability to put together the transportation budget as we would like to?
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Powell. You know, the fact here is that the department is threatening to cancel projects because this FAST Act funding has not been authorized. And those threats are actually do impact how we approach the transportation budget this year. And I would just reemphasize, the original letter was sent on October 31st, that we should have to be forced to subpoena the commissioner to get a response to a letter. To me, it seems utterly ridiculous.
Representative Torkelson. Or I was thinking, sorry, was that to Representative Lesh or?
It was just a statement, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Well, Representative Lesh,
Chair,
and Chair Torkelson, I mean, I think you may feel like it's. You're right. You shouldn't have to subpoena anyone, especially a governmental agency, which you have oversight and budgetary control. Although, as we all know, at least during my tenure, no matter which party was in control of the governor's office or the legislature, the Department of Transportation's increasing share of their budget from the feds, as opposed to the state, has made that when you tell them to jump, their willingness to say how high is a little bit slower than many of the other agencies. And so in certain instances, I think you may have to use that legislatively granted power that gets very specific. Now, a subpoena is required by a two-thirds vote of any committee, which you don't have on transportation, but which you do have in civil law. Just laying that out there.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Are there other member questions? Oh, Representative Smith.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Peterson, if you could please deliver back in as much detail as you can to the commissioner the summary of what happened this morning. And this bill needs to move forward because of the policy deadlines, but in that point is the good news for this committee is that we are about to have a whole lot of time, and this committee member will be the first, according to Representative Lesh, to gladly issue a stack of subpoenas higher than my hip to everyone in the commission and the governor's office that's associated with this. And we are going to have a whole lot of time in the month of April and May where this committee will be sitting with no deadlines. And if the department is not going to cooperate with clearly articulated and properly submitted requests with Chair Torkelson, then we will have the longest discussion in the history of this committee meeting right here every single morning. Please deliver that back to the commissioner.
Thank you. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier, maybe. What I'm looking through here, I'm not finding a lot of spreadsheet attachments, and when I read preliminary drafts, I'm thinking of the preliminary draft of the budget. The supporting materials would be those things in back of that spreadsheet. So as you gather the information, it would be particularly helpful for me if I could see exactly which emails refer to particular spreadsheets with actual preliminary drafts of the budget rather than the supporting information that was used to get there, because as I see this, the supporting information would be available to us. Maybe the preliminary drafts of the budget itself, which I would think would be in a spreadsheet form, because that's all I've really ever seen, or PDF of a spreadsheet. So if that information could be given to us, I think that might be helpful too, so that we could start to separate preliminary drafts from the supporting information, because it's not like unlike an audit where you have your work papers that would be available, but they wouldn't necessarily be part of the audit, but still be a significant part of understanding the audit.
Representative Vogel, I think that's a really good idea. Mr. Peterson, did you have any response to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, I will carry that message back and see what the response is.
All right, thank you. Any other member questions? Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, I think we've sent a really loud message from this committee, and we may indeed have to put together some subpoenas to find out the answers that we need to on this. And it's very troubling. And I think, Representative Lucero, you hit the nail on the head that it's very arrogant for a department that serves the people of the state of Minnesota, that's funded by the people of the state of Minnesota, to take this approach. And with that, members, I will renew my motion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Torkelson, I should give you the final word.
Well, if I could just make a final comment. I would like folks to return again to paragraph B of the statutes and the final sentence in that paragraph. The state administration may disclose any of the data within the state administration and to the public at any time.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. And this committee hearing has been recorded, so those at MnDOT, the commissioner and whoever their responsible authority is for getting out data requests, can review this tape. And if there was any doubt before what information we are seeking, I hope that we've made it abundantly clear. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2376 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Representative Becker Finn. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now, one of our members, before you got here, said something about we were going to have some very nice donuts from you. This is your first time before our committee, and we were anxiously awaiting. Representative Lesh offered to take up your bill, and when he found out that donuts might be coming, he withdrew his motion to do so. I have to tell you, it's not looking good for you.
I apologize, Madam Chair. I guess I didn't know every single time, every single committee. So I hear your message loud and clear, and I will make it up to the committee.
duly noted. You folks on the left need to train your freshmen a little bit better. I was in education the other day, and Representative Carlson failed also to bring treats.
We are all on the same side.
Duly noted.
Duly noted.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Smith?
Just in the interest of giving some suggestions to people who are before this committee for the first time or are still in their first term, I tried to set a new precedent when I was in here in my first term, my first year of my first term, and not only every bill with every committee the first time, but I believe every bill, every committee, every time. So just a suggestion.
Yes, I have, if I may, Madam Chair, I have daycare bills to pay, so that might get a little unwieldy, but I duly note it.
All right. Madam Chair. In your spare time, you could make us food, too. It's always cheaper that way.
Lots of spare time.
Yeah, right.
I would note that normally it's, as members of this committee know, it's my habit to have shamrock shakes here on St. Patrick's Day, and we ran into a little glitch this year because the guy who usually donates them didn't get back to us. But he did get back to my assistant at 9 o'clock this morning, so my assistant is running up there right now to the McDonald's and says she can get him back here before 10. So if you can drag this hearing out a little bit, we will have shamrock shakes here for all you to enjoy soon enough, okay?
Well, you're the best, and Representative Becker-Flynn, you've kind of been saved by your senior member.
Yes.
So we will get some sugar in us. Representative Becker-Flynn, I will move House File 1847 and recommend that it be re-referred to the General Register. Members, we've had some discussion on this bill back and forth over the last 24 hours, and I will let the bill's author explain the bill and what our discussions have been, and I believe she will be offering an oral amendment. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. So to start with, this is an agency bill. Department of Public Safety asked me to carry. So as the BCA has been working to replace the criminal history system, they've discovered some inconsistencies in statutory language, and so what's behind this bill is trying to deal with those inconsistencies so that everything's clear. We're not changing the privacy classification of anything. It just has to do with dealing with some conflicts that currently exist in Minnesota statute, and I believe there's over 30 places where that is the case. So we're trying to provide consistency so that we're transparent about what is and isn't able to be used for background checks and licensing purposes. So in the last 24 hours, Chair Scott brought a concern to me, and we've had good discussions going back and forth, and I do want to thank you, Madam Chair, to being open to resolving the issue. I think the amendment that I'm going to offer, I'm actually going to have House Research go through the amendment. I appreciate your help because I do think it does make it a stronger, better bill. And so now I'll have Ben Johnson from House Research explain the amendment.
Thank you for that. And just to let you know, the amendment is being copied for members to see, and I have talked to Representative Lesh that we would be offering this amendment, and he gave his agreement that that was okay to do. So, Mr. Johnson, if you want to introduce yourself for the tape and describe what the amendment does.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Representatives, Ben Johnson from House Research. I'm going to give a summary here of what the oral amendment is. Essentially what we're doing is we're getting rid of the repealer, which is currently Section 2 in the bill. We're going to replace that with amendments to Section 364.04. I'll explain the amendment briefly here. The new language in Chapter 364 will begin at the beginning of that statute, and it will read, unless expressly authorized by statute, comma, and then the rest of that current statute will continue. The other change will be that the third clause, which is misdemeanor convictions for which no jail sentence can be imposed, will be stricken. That will be removed from the bill. If you'd like, I could read the entire change into the record, but it sounds like there's going to be a paper copy, whatever your preference is, Madam Chair.
Right. Let's wait for that. Looks like the paper. No, that's not the paper copy. That's. Could be. Just a little background. The section that we're addressing, this 364.04, I just copied real quickly out of the statute books this morning. That's why it looks a little dark in the middle. No, it's not redacted.
It's on the back of the bill.
But the section that we're addressing, at the bottom of that section, under 364.10, it says violation of civil rights, violation of the rights established in section 364.01 to 364.10 by a public employer shall constitute a violation of a person's civil rights. And so what the representative here is trying to do, and the BCA, I understand they're building a new system and the software. They're at the point where they're wanting to get the software working in compliance with statute. And this has to do with licensing. And in the state of Minnesota, there are different requirements for different kinds of licensing as far as what kind of data you can check on a person. And this chapter kind of lays out what you can and cannot do. And one of the things that you cannot do is use just arrest record in determining whether a person should or should not be hired. And it only applies if there's no conviction as a result of that arrest record. So basically, if someone in this room was arrested but then later exonerated, there were no charges filed, if you went to apply for a license in the state of Minnesota, that information could not be used against you. And under this section of statute, that is a protected human right, our civil right. So I had an issue with the bill because it was repealing that entire section and foreseeably could have eliminated or caused some people to have their civil rights violated. So I don't know if that's as clear as mud or not, but the amendment is before you now, folks, or it's coming. And so I appreciate Representative Becker Flynn. We were talking late last night, 9 or 9:30, and she was very fast this morning to get the amendment drafted. And I think it satisfies and covers those people that may fall in the cracks as far as their civil rights go. So, and this worked out well that we had to wait because now we get to wait for our shamrock shakes. Representative Powell, if you have a question in between.
Yes, Madam Chair. And I see we're striking item 3 on 1.11 on the amendment. I guess my question is so that will be available. I take it that's what the effect of the of eliminating that is. So can you give me examples of a misdemeanor? I'm sitting here thinking what pops into my head is a traffic ticket then is now recoverable or possibly shoplifting. Can someone give me examples of what those misdemeanors are now that will be available?
And I'll have House Research Mr. Johnson explain why that is stricken. There are other places in statute that cover that section, but I'll let him address that. Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair and Representative Howe, the issue here is that there is no such thing as a misdemeanor for which no jail sentence can be imposed. By definition in the statute, a misdemeanor is a crime for which up to 90 days of jail can be imposed. So that third clause essentially is nonsensical as it appears right now. A traffic ticket and similar sort of infractions would be a petty misdemeanor. Petty misdemeanors are not addressed at all within this section right now. But the reason for removing that third clause, again, is simply because there's no such thing as a misdemeanor for which no jail time can be imposed.
Representative Powell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so in that case, was that at any one time, is this kind of old language at one time, was there misdemeanors that no jail time could be imposed, because I would have to believe we're in a society of increasing penalties on everything, and I'm just wondering, at one time, was there misdemeanors that didn't have jail time, and now all misdemeanors have jail time? Is that why that was in there, or is somebody just screwed up and threw it in there for cannon fodder?
Representative Howell, this has been in statute since 1974, but I'll allow Mr. Johnson to answer that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Howell. To my knowledge, no, there's never been a misdemeanor, because misdemeanor is defined as something for which jail time can be imposed. I think it was probably a mistake when it was initially put in.
Representative Lash?
Thank you. Madam Chair, I think y'all are forgetting about the statewide payables list. Those are misdemeanors for which jail time cannot be imposed as a function of Minnesota statute and determined and set by the Minnesota judicial branch. So I'm not sure if you're right about that. And have you taken into consideration the payables list on this? Because those are misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors for which now no jail time can be imposed.
Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I believe the answer to your question is simply that jail time could be imposed because those are misdemeanor offenses. However, there's been a decision, a policy decision, that jail time will not be imposed for those particular crimes. If people are uncomfortable with this language, it could be changed. Instead of striking it, we could change it to misdemeanor convictions for which no jail sentence was imposed, something along those lines. However, even if it appears on the payable list, it's still a misdemeanor, and in theory, it could have a jail sentence attached to it.
Well,
Representative Lash?
Madam Chair, not to get all academic, but in theory, no, because we designate offenses, the level of the crime, based on how much time is stayed, right? So if zero time is stayed, that's a petty misdemeanor. If 90 days or less is stayed, that's a misdemeanor. If a year or less is stayed, it's a misdemeanor, or a gross misdemeanor, and anything over that is felony. And that statute, that statutory scheme in Minnesota statutes, is co-equivalent to the statute authorizing the payables list. It just essentially we've allowed the Minnesota Judicial Council to designate these level of offenses. So this may be like a little bit too in the weeds for people, but when I read this, Madam Chair, I saw that this was just an effort to alleviate inconsistency in the law, and I didn't know what that meant, but I did recall, I don't know anyone around here who remembers Dave Bishop, Republican from Rochester back, you know, 1,000 years ago. Representative Johnson probably does. Did Dave Bishop serve with you, Representative Johnson? I think he did. That's all right. Just serve with Dave Bishop. He's nodding. He was telling me yes telepathically. But Representative Bishop was a fan of saying consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds. And he would say that on the floor, because it would always be Phyllis Kahn who would bring up a law to make things consistent. And then, of course, when it was Phyllis doing it, you know, who knows what it really did. But she said it was consistent. So nothing on you, Representative Beckerman, but it just reminded me of the Phyllis Kahn Dave Bishop thing. So it's not that important to me, but I just would point out, and Representative Hillstrom says, no, it's not worth the amendment, and I'll go with her on that.
Representative Hillstrom, let's hear your side.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So while Representative Lesh is correct about the payables list, by operation of law, they become a petty misdemeanor. So if they're convicted of it, by operation of law, they become petty misdemeanors just by the act of paying the bill instead. But I am not comfortable with making that change as suggested, to say if no jail sentence was imposed, because, members, there are many misdemeanor cases which, for example, they might be a malicious punishment of a child where they're working a case plan with child protection. They don't give them a jail sanction as long as they're complying with those plans, and then those would not be able to be used. And so I just want to make certain that we should either leave the language as it is, or I believe that the amendment striking it is okay. There are some things on the payables list that most people aren't going to care about, right? Fishing without a license, but they do become a petty misdemeanor by operation of law when you pay the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Other members have preferences one way or the other. I think it's okay to keep this amendment as it is. Ms. Decker, Representative Howe?
Madam Chair, I guess my question is, why are we striking it? I mean, I guess that's my question is what's wrong with leaving it the way it is in law? Why are we, I guess my question is for what purpose now are we striking this, and what data is going to be available, or what are we going to see that we didn't see before? I guess that's my question.
I would go to the bill's author or Mr. Johnson.
The answer is, I think, just that it just cleans it up. It's not going to change any access to anything because a misdemeanor conviction for which no jail sentence is a non-existent thing. So I think so that future committees don't have this discussion of a nonsense. That's why we can't make sense of it, because it doesn't exist. And so it's the striking on line 1.11 is simply clarifying that doesn't, you know, it doesn't exist. And so that's why we don't. It doesn't actually go to the overall issue that Chair Scott and I got to. I think it's just, as long as we're amending this, why not clear up this issue as well?
Representative Howe? Okay. Any other questions? Ms. Engler, did you want to provide some testimony this morning? No. All right. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to...
Madam Chair, I was just going to say, hopefully I did bring the right people from this department. I do have three people from public safety here, so I did try to live up to that, at least, even if I didn't bring donuts.
Right. We appreciate that. we'll think about forgiving you on the donut part. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for or against the bill? All right. And seeing no further member questions, we need to adopt the amendment. You're absolutely right. So, Representative Lunan moves the A2 amendment. Discussion, I think we've had some. All those in favor of adoption of the A2, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Final words to the author.
Just want to thank you, Madam Chair, and members for hearing my bill, and Madam Chair for having a phone call, taking a phone call for me at 9 o'clock last night so we could get this in the shape that everybody can agree on.
Perfect. Thanks for working on this. With that, I will renew. Did I move this bill? I did,
yes.
Didn't I? I will renew my motion that House File 1847, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Madam Chair?
Representative Smith.
Representative Lesh has an announcement.
Representative Lesh.
Well, Madam Chair, the Shamrock Shakes will be here in approximately 7 minutes now, 6 minutes. So if y'all can delay a little bit before leaving, I'll have some green milkshakes for you here.
You're the best. You're the best. Thank you. With that, members, hang around for the Shamrock Shakes, but we will go ahead and adjourn.